Yes, I knew Sister White.
We will not fear.
The kingdom is alive. The kingdom's on the move with the poor and the meek and the hungry and the lonely.
I'll never forget it.
Welcome to Adventist Voices, Spectrum's podcast. I'm Alexander Carpenter, and today I'm joined by my good friend, Bonnie Dwyer, editor of Spectrum Magazine and executive director of the Adventist Forum organization. It's great to see you, Bonnie.
Likewise, Alex. Always a pleasure.
Yes. Well, congratulations on making it almost all the way through 2020.
It has been a challenge, hasn't it?
Yes. So I want to talk to you about a few things today. One is the newest issue of the journal. Congratulations.
Great.
And then in addition to that, I'd like to hear your reporting on the most recent scholarly meetings. And then as we're moving into the Advent season, I always think it's important for Adventists to think about the ways that our denomination and our culture connects in with the 2,000-year history of Advent as the wider Christian community thinks about it. So are you game to talk about all of that?
You bet. Great. Let's do it.
Okay, good. Well, let's actually start off with some reporting. The Society of Adventist Philosophers and the Adventist Society for Religious Studies both met, as they do every year, in the week around Thanksgiving. And you attended both virtually.
How did.
What was the general feeling from it?
They were both really dynamic conferences. I didn't know what to expect from a virtual conference. And I think both organizations pulled off really wonderful meetings virtually. I think the audience grew, for instance, significantly for the Society of Adventist Philosophers. I think they probably doubled the number of people who were attending because of the virtual nature of it.
Oh, great.
And it allowed for a more international audience for both meetings. On the Adventist Society for Religious Studies, there were people there from really all over the world participating. And their main address on Sabbath morning, Sigve Tonstad, preached from Norway. And so it was a enlarged experience because of that. They tried to maintain and keep the conversational nature that's so important to scholarly conferences. And they did a pretty good job of that. You can't duplicate going out to lunch with everybody and sitting and talking for a long period of time about what you've just heard. Although they, at ASRS, they just, even during their breaks, they left the Zoom open so that anybody who wanted to just sit and visit via Zoom could. And I think a lot of people did. So it was... The atmosphere was friendly and congenial and talked to tough topics like those conferences are want to do and were really, I think, very good. Particularly because the Adventist Society for Religious Studies was discussing Sabbath, which is one of my favorite topics, found it particularly unusual in the papers that were presented and in what I walked away with. But the philosophers did a great job too. Both were really good meetings.
Well, let's jump into the conversation about the Sabbath. What were some of the kind of big intellectual takeaways, new hermeneutical approaches, new meanings associated with the Adventist understanding of the Sabbath. What stuck out to you?
Well, the title of the conference was Sabbath: Roots, Rest, and Resistance. And so there was a lot of talk about social justice. And while I've always associated Sabbath with social justice, I don't know that I've heard it discussed by so many people in so many different ways.
Sure.
And so, for instance, Andy Blesser, a 2015 grad from Andrews, who lives in Illinois, and is connected with Loyola University and has helped with some churches there. Anyway, he did a piece on Jesus' Sabbath miracles and Adventist ethics. And it was an intriguing piece because he was, in the discussion of healing, he was differentiating between disease and illness, and saying disease is a bodily problem that can get fixed with medicine. Illness is more societal and requires a cure beyond just pills. And it changes a person's status. And so he was...
So like leprosy? Is that one of...
The illustration that he was using, he was looking at Jesus' miracles and pointing out, for instance, that Jesus healed very intentionally on the Sabbath.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't that Jesus, that people just happened to come along and it's, oh, well, what am I going to do? I've, you know, no, Jesus set up the situation so that he could heal on Sabbath, so that he could challenge the Pharisees.
So they were political acts. It wasn't
they
just
were political
healing a person.
Acts.
It was sort of a public happening that people witnessed and not just supporters of Jesus witnessed, also people who were threatened by Jesus witnessed.
Right. And
deal with.
And the point of the healing was often beyond just the lame man walking. It was the change in that person's status in society. And so then he was also taking this healing to healing of land, and so talking ecology and saying that Sabbath is a time to do, to address societal issues. And so that was a really interesting
Great.
One. And so then there was another one on healing that went in a, I think, a new direction for many, many people by Von Nelson. And he was talking about Crip theology, which is coming out of cripples.
Yeah.
And the whole concept.
Sort of a language connected to ableism and helping us understand.
Yes.
The way that we... the identity that's connected to our physicality or lack thereof.
And he talked about the time element that's involved in a disability, that they do things at a different speed. And he said that Sabbath ends up getting pulled into that discussion a lot. And so he kind of explored how he kind of came into discussing disability theology, because there's a whole theology built all around that. And it was really a fascinating presentation about... I think ways of thinking about like disabled people live in the in-between. They live in between what they used to be and what they hope to be. And that liminality position. And the people who write about, well, what if the lame person doesn't get healed? Do we talk about them being their life in the now? And the concept of now was really significant in that whole discussion. So, you know, just I hadn't seen that one coming at all. And he did a really fascinating job describing it and putting it out there as something that we need to be examining more.
That's something I always appreciate about the scholarly meetings, is that it's really a chance for folks to take big ideas that are out there kind of in the larger community on the cutting edge, and thank goodness for them, because they're willing to then think about their Adventism, and look for ways that both worlds can inform each other and often, you know, help enriches. I mean, it's really the history of what Spectrum has done, is it's been a place where you get folks who are paying attention to kind of cutting edge ideas and helping that, helping folks connect it to their Adventist faith.
Well, this year in particular, I've been going to these meetings now for 20 years and have enjoyed the camaraderie and the conversation. But the significance for the church really came home to me this time around from these readings on Sabbath, because we talk about the importance of reading scripture together. So what does it mean to read scripture together as a church? Does that mean in your local Sabbath school? Yes, of course. You come to a different kind of understanding in your local Sabbath school when you read scripture together. But for the church as a whole, where does the church as a whole read scripture together? And this is the place where that happens. Yeah. And it's so important for us as a denomination that our scholars are reading scripture together and spending time talking about it and critiquing each other and listening to scripture and to each other in whole new ways. It is just so important for our community that this happen. And so I'm glad the pandemic didn't get in the way, that that reading continued and will, I know. So,
well, you mentioned Sigve Tonstad. Do you mind giving us a sense of what he contributed?
I'd be delighted to. Sigve was also elected to the leadership of ASRS. They have a situation where you kind of go through 3 years. You get elected as a vice president and then president-elect and president. So he was the person elected this year. And so in a couple of years, he'll serve as president. This year,
following in the tradition of you,
well, of a lot of people, yeah. there have been a lot of since they have the presidency turns over every year. Yeah. They've had a lot of presidents.
No election fraud that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think they had to recount the ballots or anything. I think everybody took it on the first go round. So, but because of Sigve's book, The Lost Meaning of the Sabbath Day, they invited him to preach the Sabbath sermon, which he did. And he did it from a church outside of Oslo. Really beautiful church, technologically advanced. I mean, the whole screen behind him, or the whole wall behind him, served like a screen. I mean, you know, they were putting up quotes and things that on the wall. And it was just a really beautiful church. He talked about the meaning of Sabbath as divine commitment over divine commandment. We think about it as the fourth commandment, as something that we have to do. Mm-hmm. He talked about what God did on Sabbath, and that it is in Sabbath that God makes his commitment to man. And so that's where you see salvation from the very beginning, is God showing up on Sabbath to be with his creation, and he is committed to his creation and committed to saving his creation. Yeah. It was
beautiful.
It was very beautiful.
Was there anything else that came out of these meetings that you see kind of new directions in Adventist
Well, thought? A couple of other, the current president of ASRS is Mathilda Fry from Walla Walla. Mm-hmm. And she did her presidential address on remembering and talked about, she's a biblical scholar, and it was beautiful listening to her interpretation of scripture and seeing where she went for her stories of Sabbath. She says how we tell the story of Sabbath makes a difference. And she talked about Sabbath like a character and related that to Jewish rabbis who refer to the Sabbath as the queen or the bride. Sure. And so she was talking about that. And then because of the social justice side, she went to Exodus 23 rather than Exodus 20 and looked at the text there. And the remembering of your servant's son. So not only are the people in your house, your manservant, your maidservant, this goes even further to the servant's son. And she drew a parallel between Hagar and how Hagar is kind of the consummate example of that, how we treat others on Sabbath. So she did a beautiful job. And then the other person that just was on fire with this social justice discussion was Nick Miller.
Oh, great.
And he has been going to Puerto Rico and started to teach. He does a semester every year at Antillian University there teaching. And he decided that he wanted to do that because he wanted to learn Spanish. And what he ended up doing was having his social conscience really awakened there. So he was talking about Sabbath as Jubilee and the importance of, and he talked about debt forgiveness and the significance of the Jubilee 2000 movement that had debt forgiven in a large number of countries. And so he was really talking the political side of Sabbath and saying that we need to recover that, that it, we need to get past what happened in the 20s and 30s and recover our justice understanding and Jubilee understanding of Sabbath.
That's great to hear these very real world applications.
Yeah. And then the other unusual interpretation of Sabbath was done by Darrell Ward from Kettering. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the Sabbath as a holy day and the significance of holiness, and that the holiness is because it is consecrated by God. We don't make it holy. God made it holy. And because it is holy, that's why it's so important for us to remember. Mm. And so he discussed it as in a similar manner to sacraments. And so was looking at communion and what makes a sacrament holy. And the divine presence that comes in a sacrament being very important, and that we need to recover that divine presence in our understanding of Sabbath, and that that would make a big difference in how we spend Sabbath.
Yeah, I would think that it would also help us think about the way the incarnation functions and its theological meanings for us today.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I know that later we're going to talk Advent, but it's this Sabbath being present all week long. It's how do you hold on to that presence of God all week long, and which is what Advent is.
Well, before we get to our conversation about Advent, which dovetails nicely here, let's take a moment. And I'm hoping that some of these papers will show up in the pages of the journal. But
I have one more thing that I should tell, because we've already started doing some of these on the website. On Sabbath morning, on Sabbath, there were two panels. There was one for Sabbath school and then one in the afternoon. The one in the morning was a nice distillation of this concept of Sabbath and social justice. But the papers were shorter because it was a panel. So each panel member got, 5 minutes or something like that. So they did those papers, and the Marina Cease Garner, for instance, did one on Sabbath as virtue. And I think we've already posted that one on the website, and we will be posting the rest of the ones from that Sabbath panel. Olive Hemmings did just an amazing look at Sabbath through the lens of the third angel's message, and was the Old Testament prophet she always sounds like.
Great.
So she was great.
So definitely check out the website for papers from the conference and future issues of the journal. Congratulations on volume 48, issue 4, the latest issue that should be hitting folks' mailboxes soon.
Soon, yes, I hope.
I want to talk about your editorial, but I'll just mention a couple of the folks that people can read in the most recent issue of the journal. And if you're not a subscriber, now is a great time to subscribe.
Yes.
And it can be mostly tax deductible as well. You've got William G. Johnson.
Bill Johnson is just preaching for
us. Former editor of the Adventist Review, and almost becoming a frequent contributor to
happy to have him.
Chuck Scriven is in here, Admiral Nakube, and I won't go through everyone in here, but you've got some conversation about education in the time of COVID from some great reporters and administrators, and then lessons from recent church history. So some coronavirus conversations, very timely. And we've got also Chris Blake doing a book review on a book, When Scripture Meets Life, book review of Unclobber, Rethinking Our Misuse of the Bible on Homosexuality. And Chris Blake is one of our great writers in the church. So
I have to mention that Ron Lawson's piece in there on LGBTQ members in the church is essentially a history of kinship.
Oh, great.
And I don't know that that has been written in any other place. And so I think it's a really significant piece. And Gil Valentine has done some reading of new source material on Glacier View. That's really good. And then that reporting on the CARES Act was done by Alva Johnson at Southern Adventist University with some of her journalism students. And it's outstanding work. So some really good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of good stuff, you wrote in your an editorial. Here's the title, 2020, More Beautiful and More Terrible. Such a great title from Imani Perry's book. What were you thinking about as you were writing your editorial?
Well, that book, More Beautiful, More Terrible, I really enjoyed it. And I had not heard of it until our Friday Forum book group selected it as something to read. So I got it out. And in the beginning of the book, the author talks about the title, More Beautiful, More Terrible, comes from James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. And it was inspired by that, she said. But it was also inspired by this recording of two trombones by Sonny Rollins and John Coltrane. Okay. Anyway, I went and looked it up on YouTube and started playing it while I was reading the book. And what was fascinating to me was how listening to that music affected how I read the words that were in front of me. And so that combination and what she was wanting to accomplish in her book was not only to make you aware of the terrible things that have happened within the racial history of our country, but also the beauty of Black culture, and that you have to understand both of those things.
Sure.
As you are talking race in at any point in time. And that was a very helpful insight for me, helpful to the discussion of race, which is so important this year, but to the whole year, because this year has had just terrible things with the pandemic and all the people who have died and the shutdown of businesses. And we've all had a terrible time, but that there can be beauty that can exist at the same time. It isn't one or the other. We can have both.
Yeah, we have to hold on to that paradox of of really existence for this time of year is a time for me that I always enjoy being at church, because I just love the Christmas decorations that show up and the warmth that's in the church, in folks' hearts, the hope for a new year that accompanies the Advent season. And as you were talking about the conversations among the scholars, you were talking about incarnation and the Sabbath, and I'd just love to get your thoughts as a longtime observer of Adventism and a longtime attendee of local churches. What does the Advent season mean to you as an Adventist?
The music and the lights and all of that are really, the beautiful sides of things are really wonderful. For quite a number of years, the local church that I go to has done a drive-through nativity where we have scenes of Christ's life and people drive through, and doing that on a yearly basis has made the season, I think, all the more meaningful to me. And the watching people take on the role of the various characters in the story And so that it's Christ's story, but our story becomes part of his, that back and forth between Christ's story becoming ours and ours becoming part of his, that exchange of story, I think is significant. And that the story is about joy. That's what he came to bring was joy. Mm-hmm. And this year in particular, boy, do we need it.
Yes.
And so anything that can bring us to that joy is such a blessing.
Very true. Well, it's always fun to talk with you. And it's especially nice now as we're thinking about the kind of closing of this year to get a message of joy and to look for joy that's out there. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex. Always a pleasure.
Yes, I knew Sister White.
We will not fear.
The kingdom